Live from Agile Australia.
This is the Agile Revolution.
In another bottom-busting episode, by the way.
Bottom-busting episode, yes. Hard seats.
Hard.
Hey, listen, we've had a couple of requests to talk to this exciting panelist we've got in front of us, Em Campbell-Pretty. How are you doing, Em?
Good, thanks, Craig.
So we had some people come through because we talked about SAFe in a couple of the last episodes. Not that that's your only repertoire, and we'll get to that in a moment, but people have said to us, you should get another side of the story. Do you know this person called Em? And we said, of course we know Em. We've known Em for years, right? So it's great to see Em.
So when we say we're talking about SAFe, does it mean that we're bagging SAFe too much?
No, people just said we're talking about it, but
get
we should
get a fresh perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about you, Em, is that you've lived and breathed it. You're, I guess, you know, maybe safe to say one of the poster childs. Yeah, every presentation I go to, someone mentions your name and shoves a Telstra logo up somewhere. So
no longer at Telstra.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Yes. But tell us a little bit about, for people who don't know who the heck you are.
Okay.
Right? Who are you, and how did you come to this whole agile thing?
So I'm Em. I came to Agile from the business side about 4 years ago maybe now. I was a business sponsor of a large program that was spending lots of money and delivering very little, and I was really looking for another way to get an outcome. I had the good fortune to be at Telstra at the time when they were starting to explore Agile, and I had a director on the IT side who had a target to have 10% of his projects agile by the end of the year. So I had a problem, he had a problem, he had a target to hit. So he said, go and talk to the agile folk. And I went
the
on
agile
folk. Yeah.
Those guys in the corner, right? We don't talk about them.
With those little hats with the propellers
spinning
on
wheels,
and the spinning wheels, those are the ones.
That was it.
And he said, no, not them.
I didn't know what they looked like. Who are these people?
It's over there where it's very dark.
So I went with my leadership team and the IT leadership team on 2 days Agile fundamental training, believe it or not, run by Mark Richards.
Yeah.
Which is how we met. So we went from one little Agile pilot project in February 2011 to me being asked to lead the IT team about 12 months later, and there we found SCOTT Agile Framework. So I guess I'm probably best known for launching Australia's first Agile release train, mm-hmm. And being a case study on the SCOTT Agile Framework site. And my blog these days, apparently, it's very popular. I've just been in the States where people keep walking up to me and saying, I've read your blog. That's really scary.
I can't understand anything because it's got U's and O's and all sorts of weird.
It's really weird when someone walks up to you and says, you're pretty agile. Yes, I am.
I'm more than just pretty agile. We're all the way agile now.
Yes. But stuck with the tag.
That's it. No, surnames, you can't really do much with them.
No, very true.
So, that's the story, I guess, but SAFe. I mean, you know, Tony, we've been talking about SAFe. I mean, how first did it come to your, how did you sort of come across, we're doing this thing, mm-hmm. you need to scale up?
So, when I inherited the IT team, I inherited about 150 people. I had 5 agile teams I've been working with as a business sponsor. And as a business sponsor, we had these 5 very agile teams all doing their own very agile thing, which is great, except when you're trying to run a program and you're trying to understand how it all fits together. So we had a bit of pain around that. I'd inherited another 3 teams that were doing something that they called agile, and I don't know what I'd call it, but we'll go with not agile.
We've all seen
it. I'm going to call it things on walls.
Always pretty, yeah. Yeah. We're agile because we've stuck something right.
Yeah, wallpaper, yeah. Wallpapering, absolutely. And I also had an offshore outsource team. So that was my world. I'd had a bit of success with Agile at that point. So I felt that my first decision as leading the IT group would be to everyone to one process. And I knew that 5 teams all doing their own Agile thing wasn't necessarily a great thing. So
how was that perceived? Because, I mean, we talk about the fact that the whole point of Agile is this continuous improvement, find your own process.
Yes.
And quite often when we're on the other side of the fence, like where you are now, kind of go, when managers come in and go, we need to do this process, it's like, what are we doing? So was it because they weren't mature enough to know, or was it that they actually felt that they needed it?
I think the teams that we had initially in Agile felt they needed structure too. And as teams, they're interdependent, right? So we had five Agile teams all working on the one platform and really struggling with a whole raft of stuff. So by creating, you know, the Agile release train is this metaphor for team of teams and program. So we create this team of teams world where they have a better way to talk to each other and they start to speak the same language. I mean, the team loves being a release train, and we didn't ever get any resistance from the teams, bearing in mind they hadn't been Agile before their sort of brief, the first year we'd done it at Telstra, so they didn't come with that Agile mindset that, you know, people have been doing Agile for 10 years and the small teams and everyone does their own thing. So they came from a different world, which helped. In this world where we had all these things, somebody recommended Dean's first book, Scaling Software Agility, to Mark. Mark read it. Mark sent me on my Christmas holidays to Bali with it, and I've texted Mark from Bali and said, actually, I wouldn't mind one of these release train things. And 8 weeks later, someone handed me an IT team. Brilliant. So we were doing SAFe before it was SAFe. So there was no SAFe, there was no certification, there was no training. There was the Scaling Software Agility book. And when Dean came to Melbourne in February 2012, we discovered he'd written another book that we weren't even aware of, which is really the foundations of SAFe, which is Agile Software Requirements. So we read the book.
The stupidest title for a book ever.
Absolutely, yeah. And he acknowledges that. Absolutely. So we took the books and we sat down with the people who were going to need to do the work, and we started a conversation.
Okay. So I guess my question is, if you look back at it now, would you do it again? Would you do that same thing, knowing what you know now?
Oh, without any hesitation. It was, you know, I look at my sort of story with the enterprise data warehouse at Telstra, and there were two really smart things we did. One really doesn't have anything to do with SAFe, but it's around how with the new approach we took to sourcing data, and the other, without any doubt, was Agile and SAFe. And bearing in mind, we're not SAFe purists by any stretch of the imagination, but did it give us a structure, a framework, something to bounce our ideas off? So we're in a world without all this certification and training. We have a book, and we sit down. I sit down with my leadership team every week, and we read a chapter of the book, and we go, okay, that's what Dean would do. Here is our context.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do given our context? And we took some ideas and used them, and other ideas and didn't. I mean, one of the other things we're strangely well known for is SAFe without the PSI planning. So that was one of the very unique things. So you know, it's a framework and it's based on principles. And as long as you're coming back to the principles, I think it's fine. I mean, I've yet to find a site that does SAFe, textbook SAFe. And I honestly believe if you go out and do textbook SAFe, you're going to fail.
Mm. That would be my concern. Yeah. My concern would be for young institutions or young teams,
yes,
that get hold of these things and they try to follow it belligerently and,
yep,
follow it to the dot point, then they fail.
So they read the book and don't have that conversation.
That's right. So I think the interesting key thing I picked up on, you said there, is that you don't do pure SAFe.
Absolutely.
Right? It's like how many people do pure Scrum? Very rare.
Absolutely. So if you read the book properly, I know there's a quote in there I found the other day, because you know, people often bring up the, you know, what if someone just blindly follows it? And the book says, point blank, you have to apply this to your context. You should not just take this and do this. You should apply it to what makes sense in your world. And Dean's very clear about that. So, you know, it's interesting how SAFe gets perceived in the community, but there's no doubt in talking to Dean that he absolutely expects you to apply your context. And he also is very, it's very clear that what he did was take some ideas that other people had and stitch them together in a way that helps you scale. He's not trying to reinvent Scrum. He's not trying to reinvent.
Yeah, it's not like Scrum of Scrums wasn't out there already,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. And that's it. You know, Scrum of Scrums, it's in the framework. He's just taken other people's ideas and said, if you put them together this way, it's going to help you operate at a larger scale. And, you know, for me, that was true.
So what would you say to, and out of the three of us, I've probably been one of the most ardent saying that I don't particularly like what SAFe does.
Sure.
Okay, so I'll put that,
no,
that out.
Fine.
Which is cool. Which
Turning
is,
up
know,
to it. That's our first, Tony.
Well, I think my point of view there is based on where I'm at in the journey, what I've been doing for a lifetime as well, right? So that's fair point. But what would you say, because it's not just me, obviously, there's a lot of conversation out there.
You don't think portfolio Kanban is a good idea?
I think attributes of portfolio Kanban are a good idea. Would I do portfolio Kanban in its completeness? Again, probably not. So there's bits and pieces of the things that I've worked through in my experience that work with certain teams and don't work with certain teams in contexts.
So limiting work in progress is not worthwhile?
Oh, yes. I can't, sorry. I could never not say that, Renee. You're getting off my question.
It's all right, Em. We'll just let Renee and Tony argue with themselves.
This is normal podcast behaviour with Renee. We're not going to have that theoretical discussion.
What was your question, Tony?
My question was, what would you say to the people out there? Because there is a lot of commentary on SAFe, and you know there has been a very high-profile commentary in saying we are better than SAFe in the Agile community now. What would you say to people about that?
I think there's probably a couple of things. There's first, it's context specific, right? So if you're not big, if you're not playing in big enterprise, SAFe will make no sense to you, and it's not the right thing for you to do.
And what does big enterprise mean? Does that mean where you've got a project with multiple teams, or does that mean a large organisation in general?
I think really SAFe is designed for large organisations. In my particular situation, I took a large IT team inside a large organisation, and it helped me deal with that. If your entire IT team is, you know, less than 150 people, you might want to run it as an agile release train, maybe, or you may just want to find something else. Mm. But when you're playing in that world of really large applications and really large teams, it helps. I guess in large enterprise, as much as we love this idea of this self-organising team that's empowered to do stuff, you know, the example I give from my data world is I don't want everyone to go out and build their own SQL Server database. That is a really bad outcome if you're in a large enterprise. What I want you to do is all converge around our enterprise data platform. And I've got to make that possible. So I can't have a whole heap of teams working on that platform or doing their own thing. So that's, you know, that's the context. The other thing I'd say is SAFe is where you start, right? So, I say the same thing about Scrum. If you want to start with Agile, where do you start? Start with Scrum. Why? Because it's got nice process and a nice framework, and it's a really great place to start. And
then because people thrive that, right? If they're coming from waterfall or what they perceive to be waterfall, or even, you know, failed attempts before, they're kind of craving for that rule book, right? It's just a human nature.
Absolutely.
If I've never done it before, I need it. And I think what you've hit on is the key, and this is where most people, I think, in the argument get, you know, kind of caught up. Is that they think that, you know, if I do SAFe now, I'm going to still be doing SAFe in 10 years' time. And if you are, then something's gone horribly wrong.
Absolutely.
And that does become my worry in big organisations. Is where they institutionalise it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it becomes the indoctrined, you must do this. And we all know that big organisations do that.
Yes.
Because they seek for that command and control. And what they do is they turn something like SAFe into the command and control. You know, they did it with RUP.
Yep.
A lot of organisations turn that into...
And they shaking their head.
Yeah, so I just want to, in fairness, say that they don't always do it just due to command and control. Sometimes they try and implement in a similar way in order to get consistency of approach so that, you know, the way that metrics are reported are the same, as an example. Or that, you know, you can go to any wall and you don't necessarily need a legend. Anyone can read it at any point in time. Things such as terminology being the same is quite critical to a large enterprise.
I would say that that's not wrong in doing that with lots of different types of Agile as well.
Yeah.
The same thing exists. It's just that I think, and no difference to SAFe, but I do think it lends itself to them taking it and using it as a hammer and a nail. That's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, so what we do when we bring SAFe into an organisation is we start with the 2 days leading SAFe training, and that is lean principles, right? That and leadership.
Is that certified, by the way?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Are you?
No.
Okay. Craig, what do you think?
Context for listeners, Tony meant crazy, and I'm not certified crazy.
She
answered the right question.
So Sorry, completely off.
2 days lean training.
So we start with the
lean.
Absolutely, and leadership. So you know, we talk a lot about Toyota. We talk about you know why was Toyota successful? Why is Toyota still the leanest company in the world? Kaizen, leadership,
why can't
respect
people
for people.
Toyota.
It's in the
because
culture,
they don't buy into it. They don't buy into the
you
culture.
You talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's certainly the conversation I have with people. You have to buy into the culture. And I guess when you look at the you know, my case study around SAFE, it's culture, leadership. You know that's it. In the end, did I create the world's greatest software engineering group? No. Did I create the world's best data warehousing group? No. But is that group have the most fabulous culture? Absolutely it does. And did it make a world of difference? Yes it did. And SAFE helped me do that. I'm sure there are other answers, but SAFE helped me do that. And I think that nice sort of leading introduction that is now there, that obviously wasn't so much there when I started, I think is great. And that's certainly how Mark and I go into organisations. We start a conversation around lean leadership.
So how do you establish that culture in leaders?
Reinforcement.
So embedded.
Can't see, she's carrying a piece of 4x2 right now. She's about to hit Tony with it. So.
Like
embedded coaches Taser. Or consulting, or is it ground up based reinforcement?
So. Certainly Mark and I both consult very much at the leadership level. So for me, my thought was in leaving Telstra that there are other people like me. So there are middle managers, general managers, directors, directors of software engineering, what have you. There are these people who want to make a change and don't know where to start. And I think, I had Mark. So that was, that was sort of the combination that we had. But kind of, I'd like to be someone else's Mark, right? So let's, hopefully give other people a peer to have a conversation with. So I've been there, I've done it. I've been a senior exec in a large organisation, yep. So I understand their context, and hopefully I can help them do what I did, and that's for me the answer. I certainly when I consult, when I train, when I coach, the message I give over and over and over again, this only works if the leadership gets it. Only works if the leadership gets it.
And do you think that's the difference between like Scrum or just Agile as we know it, and methods like this, in that something like XP or Scrum is actually very easy to put into team level, which means we get that bottom down, and this is now filling that gap for the for the top side. Because what I've always liked about SAFE from the, from the first book, is the diagrams always had the Scrum team in the bottom left hand corner, and whilst I had trouble sometimes building into the whole release train on PSI type planning type things, at least we hadn't thrown away all the good stuff.
SAFE is built on teams. The whole premise is nothing beats an agile team. So what do you, if you're going to have a large enterprise and you want to be successful, you want to be agile. So how do you deal with lots and lots of agile teams? And that requires a different style of leadership. But with a different style of leadership, you can make it work.
Yeah, I buy into that. I was just having a conversation with someone else out there who's a new coach, and they were asking some questions about that. And I said to them, have you got that buy-in from the top? Because she's saying, we're trying to put this in, and I'm saying, well, if you haven't got that buy-in from the top, then you're in trouble, because that just gives your frozen middle layer all their fun and games. And whilst they've got that out, there's nothing at top telling them to do it, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
And for me, you start with that so-called frozen middle, right? So SAFE starts at the program level. So you find that middle manager, that person who's got that team of 150 people, and you start there. And the bottom stuff will naturally form as it has over a long period of time, but you need a really strong leader prepared to stand firm against the greater organisation while you're bringing that change in. If you've got top support, that's great, but if you don't, you can still make a change. So certainly the change I made was quite independent. It was what I did to make my organisation work, and that again required us to think about how we were going to interact with the rest of the organisation, and back to why SAFE is a useful tool.
So I had the pleasure of visiting Telstra yesterday and having a look at your ex-teammate's wall. It was probably one of the largest walls I've seen. It probably isn't the largest I've ever seen. But it was still pretty big. I think it was around about 10 metres long.
Wow.
And it was a single flow of work going end to end. So all the way through all the governance, effectively governance steps.
Yep.
I think it blew a couple of people in our team's mind because of the whole epic feature being around the wrong way and
yes.
getting used to that and looking at it as if it was backwards. But,
yeah, safe, epic feature.
Yeah.
Mm. Why? Everybody just agreed it was feature.
Epic story.
Oh, well, I think someone missed the lean group
lean,
on that
lean,
one.
Yeah. Lean missed the memo.
Yeah. But poor Dean.
It was a huge wall and basically going all the way down into the teams, doing the work, seeing what was in progress, seeing the cues that you had in the system. Would you do anything on that wall differently?
Those walls actually go up and down all the time. So the wall you saw only been there for... I don't know, a month or so. Most of our walls don't last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So inspect and adapt.
Yeah.
Those walls go up and down all the time. So
always changing is quite critical?
Always changing. I think if your walls aren't changing, then your process probably isn't changing, and then you're not doing inspect and adapt, and you're never going to be Toyota.
So there's two things that I think were interesting to me. One was around some of the imagery of cycle time being quite long versus short. Mm-hmm. So in visual cues on that, rather than dotting up the cards, had separate little avatars for that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that because that was a particular concern of work that was sort of lingering around too long, or
we've really wanted to focus on getting to a place where we can predict cycle time. So moving away from being able to change our estimation models and a whole raft of stuff like that requires us to have an alternative.
Yep.
And the alternative would be to have a really good idea around cycle time. But that requires us to have some level of consistency, and our work comes in all different shapes and sizes.
Yep.
As an enterprise data warehouse, you're sort of on the receiving end of every project across the entire organisation, and they all have different impacts onto the warehouse. So trying to get ourselves to a spot where we could get reliable cycle time metrics was certainly, that was what we were trying to do, and that's obviously the mission that the guys are still going after.
What sort of metrics do you think were key other than cycle time? Noticed you had a CFD up there.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. To be honest, my two favourite metrics are employee net promoter score and stakeholder net promoter score. So the net promoter system, the guys who wrote that book, the Ultimate Question 2.0, basically say you can't have happy customers if you don't have happy employees. And when I came to the role with the warehouse, we didn't have very many happy customers, and I thought, well, I better start by finding out if we had happy employees or not. That was an uncomfortable moment.
I saw some of the scores.
Yeah. But you know, that's very much been the journey, changing the culture to create a place where people want to work, and the team I inherited was so well known in the IT market in Melbourne that we could not hire. From a world when I left where people are queuing to get jobs on that site. And consequently, the customer feedback metrics have gone through the roof as well. I mean, you know, quite often when I talk about what we're doing, you know, people say, how do you measure success? And I go, well, happy customers, right? In the end, I've gone from a world in which everybody was escalating and screaming and never getting what they wanted to a world where I didn't have a job anymore because there weren't enough escalations. So I said,
and people
team.
Wanted to be on the train.
Absolutely.
Yeah, on absolutely. All right.
On the train?
On the train,
yes, on
absolutely.
Train. Yes.
Yeah, love it.
So you've left Telstra now?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
And where are you now?
So Mark and I have started, Mark Richards, that is, and I have started a joint venture, which is Context Matters.
Great name.
Great. Get the plug in. Website?
Website, www.contextmatters.com.au. We're consulting in large enterprise space. We offer safe training, consulting and coaching. Australia-wide.
Going well?
Going very well.
That's good.
I mean, I guess... One thing about safe, I guess, is sort of the question is that its name implies even, you know, it's the easy way or the safe way to start Agile. But even talking to guys like Australia Post, for example, who are also talking here at the conference, for them, I mean, they're even aware it's not the means to the end, but I don't know, they have you guys in doing the training there. It's at least an easy way to talk to management. Sometimes the higher level management, the middle level management, right, just don't get it.
Yep.
So you're finding that just by the fact that there is a wealth of stuff behind the brand and that there is a certification, that that's helping the door open a little bit?
Look, I think it does. I haven't tried to go forward with something else, but do I think it does? Yeah, I think it absolutely does. Large organisations are far more comfortable when they can see that there's something behind this, and whether that's something that you go, okay, well yes, there's a depth behind this, and then you go and evolve it and make it your own, people do take a lot of comfort from the fact that there's a process there.
So how do you feel about certifications in general?
I was going to ask that question too. So.
No.
She says it's a certified safe trainer.
off the record.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. So I think, I don't know, I think each to their own. I'm not convinced most of them mean much. I have been collecting them lately, so that's kind of been fun.
Well, it's for a bingo card, right? So, CSM, tick, CSBO, tick.
CSP,
well, I'm kind of impressed with how easy they are to collect.
They have become recently easier, yes.
But look, there are obviously different things. There are certainly certifications that are amazingly easy to get, and then there are certifications that are incredibly difficult to get. Mark's just been certified as a SPCT. I've been invited to be certified as an SPCT, and there's now less than 10, and even when I go through, there'll be less than 20 in the world. And I think at this point in time, anyway, it's a nice acknowledgement from Dean and his organisation of the work that we've been doing.
Where's SAFE going? One of the things is that I think last year when we were over in Nashville, they just put a whole bunch of releases in there,
yep.
A lot more lean, for example, mm-hmm. into the curriculum. Any hints about where,
what's the roadmap? So SAFE 3.0 is coming soon. I'm pretty sure they're running the first public course in the States in July, and we're hoping to be able to offer SAFE 3.0 here in August and September. They've cleaned up some of the imagery around the picture, cleared up a lot of things that were, they were getting a lot of questions about, again, reinforce the lean leadership piece, really comes out well in the SAFE 3.0. So I'm sure there'll be lots coming out about that over the next couple of months. Saw some previews of that at the Rally On conference last week.
The other thing you mentioned at the beginning was that you used the book, right?
Yeah.
Which is now, it's getting a little dated.
Yes, it is.
The website is a brilliant resource if people actually haven't gone and looked at it. Now, obviously, you guys are offering training, and
yes.
That would obviously be the first place you go if you need help.
Of course.
But is the website now the equivalent of the book?
Well, absolutely.
Would you tell people to read the book? What would you?
I still like the book. There's something about sitting down and reading a book, and I like the book as a mechanism to bring a group of people together. So I ran book clubs with my leadership team around that book, and I still think that's a really powerful way to launch
the most
into
part,
this.
Still reasonably up to
yeah.
date.
Yeah, actually, it's funny the stuff that isn't in the book. Mark and I were talking the other day, and Release Train Engineer, which is something that is very well known in SAFE, is not in the book. So it's something that's come later. I think you've got to do both. The website is absolutely a brilliant resource, but I don't know that I could sit and click through the entire website to get the experience of reading the book. And it's a series of short articles, right? So those phrases around adapt to your context. Well, is it on the website somewhere? Well, probably, but I wouldn't know where to find it. In a book, it kind of jumps out at you a little bit better. I did hear a rumour Dean's writing a new book, so. We shall see.
Dean, can you confirm that for us?
And you're at Agile Australia doing a presentation on impact mapping?
I am.
So excited. Happy dance.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So I found impact mapping late last year.
What is it?
It's a... Quick, I would call it a strategic planning tool. It's a really great way of getting alignment around the business objectives for a project, and even helping the business understand what the true business objectives are for a project, and moving away from a world in which you've got a series of features that somebody wants to a world in which you have a series of impacts that you want to make on an organisation or a customer or what have you, and then delivering the right outcome for that, which might be software and it might not be. So moving far more to outcomes as opposed to outputs is really what impact mapping is good at helping you find those things.
So it's an alternative to story mapping, to like to getting an MVP of sorts?
It's I think it's complementary to story mapping. I was talking to Jeff Patton when he was in Melbourne, and I think we both landed on impact mapping being further up the food chain.
Beforehand. Right, yep.
So if someone's got this big idea, Jeff call it? I think opportunity, right? So you've got an opportunity. Take that opportunity and impact map that opportunity. And certainly in large enterprise context, I'm finding epics are dropping out of that.
Yeah. You heard it here, people.
all those
tools we have to rewrite.
The story mapping for me is more about
further down the line,
because when you're coming down to that impact, that behavioural change that you want to make, I think story mapping is really quite complementary in there. So certainly Jeff found them to be complementary, and from what I've seen of Jeff's work and what I've done of impact mapping, I buy that.
And what's the 5-step guide to impact mapping?
And she has no paper in front of her.
No, I have nothing.
This is completely off the cuff.
This is a test. One should have reviewed one's talk before this meeting. So impact mapping basically asks 4 questions. It starts with why. Why are we doing this? And they call that the goal. The second thing is who is impacted by this, and impact mapping calls that the actors. The third piece is how. How do we want the behaviour of those actors to change? And then finally, and what Goyko would call the least important component, is the what. What can we as a software delivery organisation do to help support the impacts? And the other thing I'd say is great about impact mapping is it does this assumption testing. So if you say, if I deliver this software feature, the assumption is that it will cause these actors to change their behaviour in this way and therefore achieve this goal. And you can see the assumptions and you can test the assumptions. So it also plays really nice with the lean startup stuff where you want to do a lot of assumption testing. So that would be the... Five steps?
I didn't even know if there was 5, but ask the question.
She hasn't been to the talk, has she? That was the whistle stop tour very quickly.
That was the short version.
And I mean, obviously we're at the conference, we'll get to see you talk about it, but is the book kind of this, is that where you kind of started with?
So the book is great.
It's nice because it's not a thick book.
Yeah.
So it's an aeroplane book.
Absolutely. It's about 50 pages. It's really great. Goyko's website is great. I can't remember what it's called, but he's got Google Impact. I think it might have impactmapping.org actually is his website. And someone called Pretty Agile wrote a really great blog on it, prettyagile.com.
Like
that?
Oh, we can't have you on with that. That's the whole thing. That's the payback.
All right, well, so many things to think about. I guess thank you for your time today. It's been good hearing it from the practitioner's mouth about the journey on SAFE and the fact that it is changeable. It's not this locked in thing, which I think is one of the things that when we talk about it, we're always reacting to the articles where people are either safe or not safe.
Right? Yeah.
And we know the background that you've come from and you sort of live that journey, and it's not the means to the end, but if you've got a scaling issue, it's a great place to start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's we have said this repeatedly, we have said it's better than nothing at all, right? Yeah. So the other thing is, for those that said we didn't present a balanced view, now you can say we do.
Right. Well, anyway.
Glad to be deserved.
So, once again, you've got this fantastic new venture and your blog. Where do they find you online if they want to know more about you?
prettyagile.com or contextmatters.com.au.
Excellent. Thanks for your time, Em.
Yeah,
enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you so much
Thanks,
for
guys.
Giving us
Yay.
The time. We really appreciate it. And that means it's time to say...
Viva la revolution!
He left us behind at the station. He got on the train.
That's it. Right, the least train's moving, dude. You're on board, right? We're not going to deliver.